Have you ever read books or heard people talk about what you believe that aren't of you? In other words, you turn on Larry King Live and there's some guy talking about Christianity believes this and that, and you kind of go, wait a minute, that's not what Christians believe. I don't believe that. Isn't that annoying? But we do that to people all the time. We write books about Muslims all the time. So a third of this book was written by me about Muslims, but I ran it by 10 Muslim scholars from Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Indonesia, Lebanon, Jordan, and said, do you agree with this? Do you agree this is what you believe? Now, that was the biggest challenge of the book, is to get them to all agree. But about a third of the book is what do Muslims believe? A third of the book are just stories like I've been telling you now. And then a third of the book is called Christ, a Christ-centered response. So as a follower of Jesus, how should we respond to the issue of women in Islam? How should we respond to the issue of, there's a chapter called Jesus and Jihad. How do you think about that as a follower of Jesus? So these are out there. It's the best part about it, right there. It's easy to read. And then I have some tapes, some DVDs. Sorry for the commercial. I just want you guys to know. I just brought 25 of these, so I had no idea how many I'd sell. This is a DVD about Muslims. It's kind of what I just talked about on DVD. And I'll just give this because I produce like a gazillion. My garage, my son who plays baseball always wants to practice baseball in the garage. He's like, Dad, would you please get rid of those DVDs? So that one's free. This is a 9-session set, and this is a 7-session set. This is teaching about this theory of Jesus first kind of evangelism style. I think it's biblical, but you can call it a philosophy or a theory, whatever. And it's also us going down, me and a friend named Jay, down to Boulder, Colorado, the University of Colorado on Pearl Street Mall, one of the most liberal cities in America. We asked 50 people the question, what do you think about Christianity? 50 out of 50 hated. I mean, in fact, we have to bleep the words that they use. And then we asked a new question. We're doing an independent documentary. We have the camera crew there on religion in America. What do you think about the person Jesus of Nazareth? We asked 50 people that question. Out of 50, how many do you think likes Jesus? 50. Now, for sure, they hate the Christianity that they perceive, and they're liking the Jesus that they perceive. So it might not be the complete Jesus, the Christ, the Son of the living God Jesus, but it's the Jesus in their head. That's on here with the teaching. And then this is 9 nights in a bar. We went to the trendiest bar in downtown Denver. It's called the Forest Room 5. And I went to the owner of this bar, and I said, we'd like to come and rent your bar out on your slow night. What's your slowest night? He said, Monday night. I said, could we come down here, bring a camera crew on Monday nights and talk about Jesus? And he goes, it's a bar. That's exactly what he said. He goes, it's a bar. I go, no, I know that's perfect. I said, do you know much about Jesus? He goes, well, you know, I mean, I was raised Catholic. And I said, no, I didn't say that. I said, do you know much about Jesus? He goes, well, yeah, I mean, no. And I said, you know, the reason why we want to come here is because we're trying to actually follow Jesus, and we're suspecting he's here. And I swear, he went like this. He goes, what do you mean? Like, you know, it was so funny. I'm thinking he was thinking it was like behind the vodka. And I said, we're thinking that Jesus might be here. And he goes, no, it's a bar. He kept saying to me, it's a bar. I said, no, I know. I said, that shows that you actually haven't read the book. Because Jesus was always in the places that the religious leaders of his day thought he wouldn't be. Right? Wasn't he? He was always in trouble. He was called a friend of sinners, not saints. Because he was a friend of sinners. And I said, he goes, well, this is incredible. He goes, are you guys Christians? I go, well, you know. And then I did that whole thing. He goes, because I've never heard any Christian ever talk like this before. I said, well, we're actually trying to follow Jesus and think about things the way he did. He goes, you know what? This is crazy. You can just have the place. You can have, I don't want to rent it to you. In fact, he goes, I'll give everybody a free beer too. So I was like, okay. So yeah. So I know this is Texas. You know, I don't know what you think about that, but like, okay. So free beer. Good. So we did. So for nine Monday nights in a row, the place was jammed. It holds, we were in a room, I mean, maybe a third this size, but it had 100, 150 people there. So people that we invited, but then also just people that are sitting there with a beer going, why are we listening to a guy talk about Jesus in a bar, you know? And so that is this. This is 9 nights in a bar, video camera with 2 video cameras with a professional video camera crew. We start out very slowly. Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., great guys of history. I don't open the Bible until the third night, so stick with it. If it sounds a bit fuzzy and universalistic and whatever, it's because that's how we started. Because these guys are sitting in a bar, not thinking. They're not seekers. It's not the Alpha course. They're not coming to learn about Christianity. They're going to drink with their buddies. So we start very slowly. By the end of the ninth week, the 10th week, which isn't on here, we had a baptism. We baptized a bunch of people that came to faith there in that bar in those 9 days. It's really cool. So these all, I sell them all together. I just throw this one. I usually sell these. I know it sounds so sales pitchy, doesn't it? I usually sell these for $60 on my website. I'm selling it for $50. So these two sets and this one all together, those three are $50, and I have 25 of them. And they're I think they're out through those doors along with the book. All right, sales pitch over. Let's get serious here. Sure, do you guys have some questions? Who's angry? Who's confused? Who's frustrated? Something, you know. Any kind of question. Go for it. Yeah. Oh, we're gonna do.
Hold on, Robert. That's your question on the mic.
Okay. Good. At some point, it seems like you'd have to butt heads regarding Muhammad, you know, versus Jesus. I mean, that they believe he's a superior prophet to Jesus, and you can't believe that. So how do you handle the tension that creates?
Okay, so the question about Muhammad, what do I do about Muhammad? Two things that are maybe difficult. I don't know if they're difficult or not, but tricky maybe is the Quran and Muhammad. So many Muslims will ask me, what do you think about the Prophet Muhammad? Or how come we believe in your guy, Jesus, and you don't believe in our guy, Muhammad? It doesn't seem fair to a Muslim, you know, that we're choosing one of the two. And first of all, he's not my guy. I mean, don't say Jesus my guy. Remember, I think that's part of the thing here is he is not yours. You do not own Jesus. Jesus is above us. He's above religion. He's Jesus, the Christ. He's God. He's, you know. So that kind of brings it back down. And then the Quran versus the Bible. Why do you believe in the Bible and not the Quran? I mean, first of all, I find that especially early on in a relationship, it's kind of like with you guys. I mean, I've been joking with you about football or whatever, but like if I don't know any of you guys personally, and if we talk afterwards, which we might do for a little bit, we have a little conversation, and quickly you get into politics, and you said, now, I think, from what you said, I can tell you're an Obama fan, or whatever, I mean, something like that. That'd be weird. And wouldn't that be awkward? And then who did you vote for last year? Do you vote for Obama or McCain? Who did you vote? Come on, tell me. Come on. That'd be weird. I mean, you don't do that. So an early conversation with a Muslim, I would say with anybody, I try not to go places that I know aren't going to work. So if a Muslim says to me, it's kind of like me asking you, my mom's name is Sherry, asking you, what do you think about my mom? And you're going, well, Carl, actually, she's kind of ugly. My mom is not ugly, by the way. She's a little overweight. And actually, you are too, Carl. I mean, you know, because it's truth, right? You've been taught we're supposed to speak truth. But do you know that all truth isn't always helpful at all times? You don't always say what's true. I mean, you come to me and say, Carl, geez, lose 30 pounds, bro. What's up? What's up with that? A little bit too many Middle Eastern sweets there. A little bit too much baklava. You know, is that true? Could I lose 30 pounds? Absolutely. But that wouldn't be very nice. So I would just say the Muhammad or the Quran or even did Jesus die, all the classic debate issues that you get into with Muslims, I don't. I actually don't debate. Now, as friendship develops, still to your question, as friendship develops and trust develops, I can talk to a Muslim friend honestly. I would just say about Muhammad, I would just say, you know, my personal opinion about Muhammad was he was actually a little p prophet, calling the Arab pluralistic, polytheistic tribes back to a relationship with God, and that he went at some point. If you read the Quran, even it's very evident. There's a Meccan period and a Medinan period, and at some point, Muhammad's life, like most religious leaders, gets a little full of power and politics, and money gets in there, and you know, camel trains, and we need a little bit of that, so we'll just borrow it a little bit. But just to humble ourselves, to say, have you ever seen any of our pastors ever do that? Get a little confused in politics. I mean, not yours, but get confused in politics. And seriously, I mean, you know, but there, you've seen that. So let's just be humble and say, like in our religious system, you know, power goes to your head. And I wonder, I'm not sure, but I'm just wondering if that was what happened to Muhammad. But I try to just kind of go, hey, you know, I never knew the guy. You know, I mean, I can't say, because it's so hard. It's like talking about your mama. you just can't say something bad about somebody's mama. You know, you just can't do it. So talking bad about Muhammad just doesn't work. It's just not good. The Quran's the same way. The Quran is such a precious book. I don't think, as many do, that the Quran is Satan's great masterpiece. I think of the Quran as, first of all, it's about 95% Bible, just straight up Bible. You read 95% of the Quran, it reads like the Psalms and the Proverbs. It's not a storyline like the Bible is. It's proverbial. It's good. It glorifies God. Opening Fatiha, the opening surah in the Quran, starts out with God, the merciful and compassionate. I mean, it reads like you're reading a psalm. Don't feel like you have to burn the Quran in your house. In fact, I would encourage you to get a Quran and read one. And the best one to read is the Oxford Press edition Quran. It's the most readable Quran there is. Because some Quran translations in English, you can't make sense. It's like reading Shakespeare. You know, and you guys remember Shakespeare? Anybody like Shakespeare when you're in sixth grade? I don't think so. But the Oxford University Press Quran, go ahead and read it. It's not going to demonize you. It's not bad. It's just, you know, just everybody breathe deep. I know we've been hurt by them, but it's okay. You can read the Quran. It would be okay. And it will show honor to your Muslim friends, and you might learn some stuff. Do I think it's equal with the Bible and it's authoritative? No, I don't. I don't. I'm assuming you don't. But that doesn't mean, do you think Shakespeare is equal to the Bible? Of course not. But do you burn your Shakespeare books? No. I mean, I get people say this kind of stuff to me. Oh, you have a Quran, Carl. I said, no, actually, I have several. Go, you have a several Quran, like in your house? I mean, isn't that, it's crazy, crazy talk. It's just because we're afraid. We're full of fear. So I would say point one is try to sidestep, especially early on, sidestep difficult issues. Don't feel like that's being a wimp. Just you're honoring. You're trying not to dishonor them by not talking about something that you know you won't agree on. And then as relationship grows, feel free then to go as far and deep as that relationship will allow you to go. Good question.
Thanks. For Muslim, as you got to know them and are friends with them, and they're very familiar with Jesus, as you said, as the person, and have a respect for him, how do you turn the conversation to the resurrection and salvation and really what Jesus means to me and give them that invitation without offending them?
Yeah, I think part of the answer is, my answer to him is that you do that over time. Part of the answer is too, I mean, your question was loaded towards when do you get to the really good stuff, you know, which again, we know. I mean, I think this, I have to be careful how I say it. We know the really, really, really good stuff, the best stuff is crucifixion, resurrection, because we know how wonderful the cross is. But I'm telling you, I mean, if 1 Corinthians 1, the cross to people who don't get the cross is foolishness. How do you understand the cross of Christ? By the Holy Spirit. So when you're talking to somebody who is by definition not yet alive in the Spirit about things that only the Spirit can reveal, the conversation doesn't go very well. I mean, honestly, have you noticed that? When you're talking to somebody about really deep things and they're not there, even amongst ourselves, there are levels of maturity even in this room. And some of you have experienced the deep things of the Spirit, and you're alive in some areas that maybe your neighbor sitting next to you right now isn't, and you turn to them and say, you know, do you walk in intimacy with God? And you try to describe it, and the guy goes, I'm already a Christian. What are you talking about? You know, you're getting a little weird there. It doesn't work. I mean, things of the Spirit by definition have to be revealed by the Spirit. So I think the answer is you go at the pace of the Holy Spirit. I'm not saying that I always do that. I sometimes jump ahead, but you know when you jump too far ahead by the reaction to the person when they run away. When that person runs out the door screaming, you go, oh, shoot. So I guess I got too excited. Because we're so excited. We know the resurrection. It's not just the cross. It's obviously the resurrection. Cross without resurrection isn't much good. It's the resurrection of Jesus that's so wonderful. And we know that. And we want them to know that. But I don't tell all of you everything that I know. And you won't want to know it. And you don't tell everybody. I mean, neither did Jesus. What's interesting is that Jesus never did that. Jesus didn't sit the 12 disciples ever down and say, okay, guys, here's the deal. I'm God. Point one, write it down, Peter. Sit down. Point one, write it down. I am God. Not I am before and Abraham and not this fuzzy stuff. I'm God. I know my dad's a carpenter and stuff, but I know it's kind of, we'll call it the incarnation later, but I'm God. So point one, point two, I'm the savior of all mankind. later on, you'll pray a prayer of salvation. You'll invite me to come into your heart and live, and then you'll be saved. Point two, write that down. And then point three, I'm the Son of God. Yeah, but I thought you said you were God. Yeah, Son of God and God. And, you know, and point four, Trinity. You got to understand. Jesus never did that. That doesn't mean it's not true, but Jesus never told his 12 all the stuff in a 30-minute presentation like we do today. Whenever you find yourself always doing things Jesus never did, then ask yourself some questions. Why do we do that? You know, and I think that's one of the things. We do this thing called a gospel presentation, something you don't see Jesus doing. That's how we do it. Is it bad? Of course it's not bad. Can the Holy Spirit use that? The Billy Graham, Luis Palau, 30-minute? Of course he can, and he does, and he has with us probably, you know. But with a Muslim who's not there, they're not ready to hear all that news. And your other neighbors are not ready to hear all that news. Just take it one step at a time. And at the appropriate time, you'll get to Luke 21 and 22. And you'll feel the freedom by the Spirit to open up those doors. And then it works because the Holy Spirit's working, which is always the key. You guys are easy. Man.
So what does it look like when a Muslim starts to follow Jesus? I mean, do they go to mosque? What happens?
Boy, that's a good question. What does it look like when a materialistic American secularist starts to follow Jesus? Do they still, they go to church, but they still keep their Lexus? Oh, sorry, did I say that? That was rough, wasn't it? Jeez. God. Bob, sorry. Where do you drive, Bob? I mean, we all have a little bit of syncretism in our hearts. We all have a little bit of mixing of the world. I mean, maybe you don't all. I do. I mean, can I follow Jesus and keep all my stuff and actually want some more stuff? Depends on which scriptures I choose to focus on, doesn't it? If I choose some of the scriptures that are in the book, then I can't keep all my stuff and want more stuff. I actually can't do that. But I do that because, you know, I mean, in the original language, it doesn't really mean that anyway. So we all have our ways to get around that. So when you're a Muslim, so much of being a Muslim means, as the couple of Muslims that are in here know well, much of being a Muslim means, by definition, culture. It's who you are. It's not so much your religious identity as it is who you are. You are Muslim. So it's kind of like being Muslim is more like being American than we think of it like being Christian, like as we think of the word Christian here. So it's not just your religious identity, it's everything. It's your culture, it's your society, it's your family. I've had Muslims say this to me, Carl, I could never be a Christian because I love my family. Ouch, that hurts. In other words, what they mean by that, could be two things. One is, I don't want a Western family like yours where, you know, you do Western Christian things like sleep around and get divorced as they perceive Western Christianity. And, or it could mean, I could never become a Christian because I love my family. I want to stay in my family. And they know that we think we want you to become a Christian. We pluck them out of their context and their culture. Change your name from Muhammad to John. You know, a good Christian name like John. You can't be Muhammad and follow Jesus. You have to be John or Robert or Peter. Good Christian names. So it's a huge conversation, but I think, can you stay in Muslim context, Muslim culture, and follow Jesus? I hope so. Otherwise, all the salt and light, once it starts to become lit and salty, all goes away. And then there's no more salt and light in the Muslim context. I mean, you want Jesus, the light of the world, to be shining brightly in Mecca. You don't want all the Saudis who are starting to follow Jesus to convert to Christianity as they perceive it. And then what do you have to do? You either get killed or you have to move to America. So we have lots of former Muslims who have now converted to Christianity who live in America, and we love them. We prayed them around. We give them platforms. We're like, yeah, we got one. You know, our tribe got one from their tribe over to our side. You know, that's not what we're talking about here. That has been the tradition of Christianity and conversion in the Middle East, but that's not what Jesus is talking about. Can you be a Jew and follow Jesus? Do you guys know that 30 years ago, being a Messianic Jew was unheard of and extremely controversial? If you were a Christian pastor or leader and talked about Messianic Judaism, in other words, Jews staying fully Jewish but following Christ, people would crucify you. They were so angry about that. Do you remember that? Do you remember when they started kind of 60s and 70s and you started hearing this controversial thing? It's almost like it's a reverse Acts 15. We now, the Gentiles who got Jesus saying, wait a minute, the Jews can't have him too. Like, well, hello. He was actually, I don't know if you know, but Jesus wasn't even a Christian. He was Jewish, you know, so, and he wasn't from Tulsa. He was actually from, you know, anyway, I can say that when I'm in Dallas, right? And that's okay. That works well. Sorry. So I think you can, it's a huge, much bigger question than I can answer now, but I think you can say in the Muslim context, going to the mosque is kind of like going to the community center. I mean, it'd be unheard of in that context. I mean, funerals and weddings and things all happen around the Islamic traditions and centers. So can you go into any building and still follow Jesus? Just like you don't, just because go to a church building doesn't make you a Christian, going to another kind of building, a synagogue or a mosque or whatever. I mean, I spent 9 nights in a bar. Do I lose my salvation? Some would say yes, but I don't think so. 9 nights in a bar talking about Jesus. Was I less following Jesus in that bar than I was in the church? No, of course, buildings are kind of irrelevant. So I think, of course, you can go to the mosque. Now, do things in your heart inside you need to change for them? Yes, just like they do for us. So hopefully I'm less of an individualistic, materialist, secularist, which is the religion of America. Materialist, individualist, secularist. I'm less of that now than I was 10 years ago. But it's still a struggle that I have in my heart. That's called getting the log out of my eye before I worry about the speck in my Muslim brother's eye. We have logs, guys. We have logs in our eyes. I mean, I don't know if you've caught this morning or not, or this afternoon. What I'm mostly talking about, I'm trying to expose to us. This is a hard message to swallow, I think. If you're hearing me carefully, you should be at least slightly tweaked or slightly offended or slightly hurt or confused. Because I'm saying, guys, we have logs in our eyes. It's not that Muslims don't have a speck in their eye. They also have specks in their eyes. The reason why you want to get the log, you know, log, think about having a log in your eye. The reason why you want to get the log out of your eye is so you can help them get the specks out of their eye. I don't want anybody to have a speck. A speck in your eye hurts. But until we get the logs out of our eye, we can't come alongside of our Muslim friends or our Jewish friends or our whatever friends and help them remove the speck. Jesus wants us to be people who remove specks from other people's eyes. But we can't do it when we have a log in our eye. You guys okay with that? You guys seem very placid and tame. I usually get peppered with like the nastiest, hardest questions. So
a good book on that, Pilgrims of Christ on the Muslim Road,
yes.
Mazhar Maloui. He's been here at our church.
You're right.
I probably didn't say his name right, but anyhow, some of you read that. Yep.
You know, since September 11th, there's been some question about, is the Allah that the Muslims, whose name the Muslims invoke, is that the same God?
There we go. Come on. Yeah. I mean, you guys are just warming up here or something, because it's Allah God. Is Allah God? And there's a simple answer to that and a complex answer. The simple answer is, what is the name for God in the Arabic language? Who knows? Allah. So what if I said Dios is the God of the Spaniards? It doesn't make any sense, does it? Is Dios the God of the Spaniards? Or is Dios God in Spanish? Dieu is God in French. God is God in English. Allah is the only name for God in Arabic. So all Arab Christians, when they're at church on Sunday morning, they're praying. Who are they praying to? Allah. They're worshiping Allah. The praise and worship songs in Arabic are beautiful. They're fantastic, and it's all to Allah. So at the semantics level, the level of language, it's almost a non-question. There's only one. First of all, how many real gods are there in the world? You guys sure? Yeah, okay, we're good on that. You know, there's only one God anyway. There aren't two gods, there aren't three gods. There are false gods, but there's only one real God. He has different names in different languages. In Arabic, his name is Allah. So that's the simple way to answer the question. So simply, the answer is yes, Allah and God are the same, because it's the real question. What you're really asking is, how Muslims perceive God correct? When Muslims think of God, when they're imagining God in their head, Allah in Arabic, God in English, when they're imagining God in their head, are they thinking of the right being? And my answer to you is, are you? Are you thinking of the right God in your head? Have you seen in the last 10 years in your life, 20 years in your life, your picture, your vision, your version of God change? That's a real question. A yes or no answer would be good. Yes or no. Have you seen the picture of God in your heads change in the last 10 years? Yes. Hopefully the answer is yes. It feels like it should be no, right? Because you're thinking, oh yeah, well, I was thinking the right. My vision and version of God, my perception of God, my understanding of God has changed dramatically. I mean, I've shared some of my story with you tonight, but it's changed dramatically. I grew up thinking God was kind of angry at me. I mean, I had a good earthly father, but he was pretty stern. He was the stern pastor. I mean, I was front row Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, like a good Christian ought to be, you know, right there. And my dad would give an altar call on Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night, and he would always look at me. Like, anybody here need to come to Jesus? You know? I got saved so much growing up. I mean, I'm the most thoroughly saved kid in the world, man. I got saved every week, three times a week. So my version of God was he's a little bit angry. He's not very happy with the way I'm acting. And he's going to do something about that too. And man, visions of hell, and I didn't want to go there, motivated me. I mean, doesn't always work with everybody, but boy, it motivated me. I want to be a good kid because I didn't want to go over there to hell. You know, that's not good. And so my whole picture of who God is as an angry judge was totally the God that I grew up with. Totally. The idea of sonship and the message that Bob preached this morning, I don't remember actually hearing that message until I was like 25. I'm sure my dad preached it 1,000, but I never heard it. I never heard that. That God doesn't just love me in an esoterical, theoretical sense, but God likes me. The idea that God likes you, that God would want to hang out with you, that Jesus was my friend, I never heard that stuff. So I would say, again, apples to apples. Let's be fair. When we think about Muslims' version or vision of God, is it absolutely correct? No, and neither is ours. Do you have it more correct? I don't know. I don't know. Do you? I would say the more correct you get is the more you know Jesus. Because what did Jesus come to do? Not just to die and rise again. He came to show us the Father. You want to see God? Look at the life of Jesus. You want to see how God treats people? Look at the life of Jesus. I always ask atheists, I said, so if there were a God, like what kind of God would you like? What kind of God, if there was one, that would you like? And you know what they do? They describe Jesus. When people think of the God, even in their head, that they'd like to have existing, they describe Jesus. And I say to them, this is amazing. You've just described a guy, a Palestinian Jew, that lived 2,000 years ago, born in like, you know, some little backwater town. And he's just like, that's what he's like, you know, Jesus. And they go, oh, brother, now it goes to this religious stuff again. No, Jesus wasn't religious. See, people got it all wrong. Why do they get it wrong? Because we talk about it wrong. We talk about Jesus as some religious zealot guy that's mad at everybody. You know, that's the one from Tulsa again. That's the wrong guy. It's not the real Jesus, man. I'm telling you what, the real one is, the real Jesus is awesome. He's awesome. Everybody that I know, when they meet the real Jesus, actually likes him and wants to follow him. Seriously, everywhere I go, people love the idea of following Jesus. We've presented him wrongly.